Call the meeting to order. At this time, we have the script read out.
We actually do not need the script since we're in person, but I'm happy to do the roll.
You're happy to do the roll.
Do the roll. Okay, thank you. Roll call of commissioners, please.
Commissioner Claude Gilmore.
Present.
Gilmore, present. Commissioner Dwayne Gray.
Present.
Gray, present. Commissioner Gray Reed. Reed, not present. Commissioner Madeline O'Connor, present. O'Connor, present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland, present. Alder Isidore Knox. Knox, not present. Alder Tag Evers.
Here.
Evers, present. Chair of Quorum is present.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to have a motion and a second for the approval of the minutes from October 26th meeting.
So moved. Mary Strickland.
It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded that the minutes of the November 26th meeting is approved. Are there any other comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Thank you. Are there any disclosures or recusals? Hearing none. Are there any communications?
No communications.
At this time, we have one item on consent agenda. And that is CDA Resolution 4639.
Move approval with consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
We move the second that the consent agenda resolution number 4639. Be approved. We consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Discussion items. Item CDA Resolution 4638 is the first item.
So this is a resolution that is copies language that the city adopted a number of years ago that would basically have you delegate to me the right to enter into relatively minor contracts related to real estate. Examples would be if MG&E needs to move a gas pipe, right now we would have to come to the board and pass a resolution for them to come on site or amend easements. This would give me the right to just sign that document. If a neighbor wanted to prune a tree and needed to put equipment on our site for the afternoon, we would have to run a resolution. That's the kind of thing that we would just delegate to me. Again, the city did this maybe 6 years ago. They just hand that over to staff so that we weren't running frivolous resolutions.
So these would be fairly routine matters, nothing about something that's very expensive we're talking about.
There's almost never money exchanged here. They have to prove insurance is the biggest hurdle.
Any questions, comments on that? Is there a motion for approval?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
You move the second and CDA Resolution 4638. Be approved. We will consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Next item is Resolution number 4637. Item for discussion.
Sure. So right now for Section 8 vouchers, the payment standard, the rents that people we're allowed to pay up to is set by fair market rent, which happens on a county-wide level. That's the standard methodology. HUD allows us to have a different specific payment standard for different zip codes if you would choose. And in fact, HUD is encouraging housing authorities to start to use this tool. So that's what's in front of you today is for the zip code 53705, instead of using the county-wide fair market rent, 53715, thank you. We would use the calculated fair market rent for that specific zip code, which is higher. And the reason we're asking for this is the zip code that the triangle sits in, as well as Romulus. But at the triangle, when we move from public housing to Section 8, these are the rents that we would be able to pay. The tenant still pays 30%, but HUD pays that difference. And since this is higher on the Section 18 vouchers. It brings more cash flow into the triangle, and it lets us carry significantly more debt than we otherwise would be able to carry. So this does affect any person who has a voucher and chooses to rent in the 53715 zip code, which the triangle will be the majority of them, but there are a handful of people who currently rent in that zip code, and other people could choose to rent there. The truth is, the most of the rental housing that's not us would be the housing right across the street or student housing. So I don't think we're going to see some sort of crazy rush of people to rent here because the payment standard is slightly higher. But that is just a consideration that it affects the entire zip code, which is basically the area all around Winona Bay.
So some of the current tenants would pay higher rent, right?
They pay the same. It just allows us to pay more if their contract rent is higher. It allows us to put more HUD money into it.
More HUD.
But they still pay 30% of their income.
So it's just a means of billing the government for additional revenue to help our bottom line.
Right, it's pushing more Section 8 funds into the triangle, mostly so that we can carry more debt.
Is there some kind of city effect of this? Like, is there less Section 8
funding? Yeah, so we have a Section 8 pool, so we would be putting more of it into this building, which means, Sadie, correct me wrong. So theoretically, we're paying higher rents here, so there'd be slightly fewer vouchers in circulation because of it. It's hundreds of dollars per unit.
Do you have the vouchers that means?
It's not really a, well, we have to look at on an average, if we look at like 2,100 vouchers at average unit cost.
What? Do you want to come up here? So it's catching on the agenda.
So when we look at the average about, well, in our regular program, just under 2,000 vouchers, we average all of the housing assistance payments we're paying each month for those to get our per unit count. So seeing that the number that would go right away into it, I think Matt, you said would be like 60 of those vouchers would be affected by being able to have that higher amount. So that might bring our per unit count up a bit, but it would only be looking at like 60 out of almost 2,000. Now, other folks with the voucher right now that live in a different zip code could elect to move into 53715. Not all of the rents, I mean, we have folks in 53715, I think we have about a dozen right now, and I believe the majority of them are in units that are well below the current payment standard. So it definitely would not have any effect on them. It's just still a matter of, I just don't see that it would bring our per unit count up that much because it's such a small amount at this time.
But out of our pool of around 2,000 vouchers, we would lose 60.
No.
Oh.
So what happens is we have so many vouchers HUD gives to us, and then we have so much money. So we have to balance that. So if I'm averaging a higher amount of payments each month, that means it's a lower amount of folks that I can help subsidize. I might have some folks where we send $2 a month for them, or we may have some folks where we send $2,000 a month for them. When you look at them all together, that's how we get to our average. So it really can ebb and flow depending on folks' incomes, if they're contributing more. You know, it's 30% of their income, $200, is it $1,000? So all of that will really ebb and flow throughout the year. So it's not like we're taking vouchers out of circulation, but would still allow us to assist up to, you know, the certain amount of people on our contract. It's just a matter of us making that work with the amount of money we have.
So are we up against that constraint right now? Like, if we increase our the formula and we're essentially allocating the same amount of money, but in a different way, do we have an estimate, or would we perhaps, you know, sort of like handful of people I know that it varies depending on how much they're actually paying or what their income is. So we have just a rough idea of what you know, what there might be a downside risk of doing this while we were able to bill more to HUD in some ways, we still are potentially paying out a little bit more as well, and that might reduce the amount of money that we have available to allocate among a fixed number of vouchers. So do we have an estimate? Are we talking about maybe restricting us by half a dozen vouchers, or do we know?
I think you're taking a couple $100,000 out of the Section 8 pool, out of a 20-plus million-dollar program.
So it's a very small percent.
Right. And so that couple $100,000 lets us leverage millions of dollars more in debt.
In terms of borrowing.
Yeah.
So it's a greater return.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yep.
Well, in terms of projects, future projects. Correct.
Well, so this will affect future phases as well. So it'll affect B2, B3, which anyone's where we have vouchers. So B2, B3 would be affected by it.
And this would also have some bearing when we get around to redevelopment of Romness?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And I will say, this is a program that HUD would love it if we do it in all zip codes in the city of Madison.
Is that right?
So that this is their preferred. Because it matches the rent to the geography much better. So we have zip codes, half the zip codes in Madison, the fair market rent would go down and half would go up because of just those regional variations
sure.
through the market rent.
So on the hood, I'm confused, right? Because I've heard or love this idea. Why isn't it something that we haven't before at this point?
It can administratively or like on my end as administering the Section 8 program, it's a bit more of administrative work. Right now I can hand a voucher to somebody and tell them this is your voucher limit, go anywhere in Madison. So when we implement the small area for our market rents, I'm gonna say if you want to look in 53715, this is your limit. If you want to look anywhere else in Madison, this is your limit, would be different. So that would be the only difference, really, is so having folks understand that they're going to have two different limits. Or if you had, I don't know how many zip codes
a
are.
Dozen.
Like a dozen, then you'd have to provide them with that many.
It's what it sounds. It's a great idea. So I'm not knocking the idea. I just think the premise of it, usually, I think people of color usually get left out when we negotiate these type of deals. So is it anything you guys can say that will say, you know, if we implement this in this particular zip code area, that anyone obviously will not be kind of kept out of the mix of this particular voucher?
Yeah, it'll be open. It'll be open to everyone. So we'll have to work on our education piece because it's new.
That's what concerned me. I mean, I'm on board with this, and I know we're going to support this, but I just feel like oftentimes we open up these new blankets and just some people get left behind and other people get wonderful opportunities. Now, I also wanted to reflect on something that came up. Is this part of the housing, the hot monitor, the housing opportunities group?
It's not. Nope. It's not related to that at all.
Okay, because I know we're getting a lot of new things that obviously we got to start building with. So this is an entirely different concept.
Okay,
thank you.
Is this going to allow us to build more units or better units at the Triangle?
I'd say no. We were planning to, we're holding the building same as we were going to do before. But if we didn't do this, we can't get any more money from our lenders, so we would have to go to the city of Madison and ask for millions of dollars of extra money to make up for the debt that we would otherwise, that we wouldn't be able to support.
Was this originally thought about as part of our financing?
It came along, as Baker Tilly recommended it,
okay.
And then we met with HUD, and HUD really liked the idea, especially we're lucky to have a person who lives in your district, who works for HUD on the Section 8 side, connected to DC, and is it one of the administrators on this program and helped us navigate.
Who is it?
Chad Ruppel.
Yep.
So
it's always been in the mix. As part of
it's always been an option. It's just as we've moved along, we've realized how large the effect is. It's not a rounding error. It significantly affects the financials of the deal. What we didn't know until recently is that our investor and lender wanted it passed now, not when the building opens, because they need to prove that we can actually achieve this cash flow before they're going to
make sense.
Yeah, of course.
Any other questions on that? I mean, it sounds like an opportunity. It may have to weigh all of that, but if it's going to yield us a better option and that people still will be able to apply, that's going to be important.
And I will say, so we signed our sort of underlying term sheet for debt, just to sort of, you know, it's not a binding commitment, but it's the term sheet for it. So we are working with CPC, which is a nonprofit lender who works in the tax credit world. I don't know if you're familiar with CPC. But then we are also getting greenhouse gas reduction funds, which is an EPA program, which will be about $7 million of our debt, and it's far below market rate debt that we're able to get. And that's because we're doing all of the green features, and the geothermal are allowing us to get the greenhouse gas reduction fund. So that again grows the amount of debt we can carry because the interest rate is so low on that component.
I'll better get that done before the administration comes in.
So those funds, I believe, have been transferred from EPA to the lender, and then the lender gets to allocate them out to deals that qualify, which our initial underwriting is $7 million.
Sounds good. If there are no further questions, are there a motion for approval? Approved to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
We move to second that resolution number 4637 be approved with consideration of unanimous vote, unless there are any objections. Hearing none, motion approved. Next item, resolution 4640, J.P. Cullens and Simons.
So for the Park Badger redevelopment, one block over,
yep.
We ran a competitive request for proposals for a construction manager. We had three applicants. We had J.P. Cullen, Findorp, and Tri-North all applied. All are very qualified contractors. In this RFP, because the amount they can charge is really pretty much dictated by WIDA, the money component is relatively small in the request for proposal. We're really looking for people who've done this kind of construction on infill sites, in affordable housing, have built fire stations, have built clinics. So a team who's really kind of done all of these pieces. And through that process, J.P. Cullen and J.C.P. Came to the top. Again, all three extremely qualified contractors. Dan, I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that. But
so you're picking two?
They're a team.
They're a team?
They're a team, yep.
But Cullen does a lot of work here in the Madison area. J.C.P. is a Milwaukee-based firm, a long-standing minority-owned firm that does a lot of great work. And so with their combined expertise, they were the consensus choice of all six of us on the staff review team.
Where are they with union labor?
I believe they are fully.
All three are union.
All three? Was that part of the RFP too?
It can't be.
Can't be? Oh.
Can that be?
No, I guess it can't by law.
Yeah, they can't quite do that, I think. But certainly like to help people support.
I thought a lot of the city business will had to be, or most of it, Davis Bacon.
So Davis Bacon will likely apply, but you cannot consider whether they're a union shop in your consideration. State statute says so. So don't consider it.
So strike my question from the record.
So these two firms wrote this together, or a package?
Yes, and they are our current construction cost estimators on the project. So they came in on the front end with
Alexander.
With Alexander.
Yeah,
they,
okay.
And they've been doing our cost estimate
okay,
along the way. But that doesn't really weigh into the RFP side of things, but they are familiar because they were part of that project.
Sounds good. Are there any further questions on this?
When will they break down ground numbers?
I think we're looking at them coming in, we'll say probably March or April of 2026, assuming we go through entitlement. So the city council passed the master plan last night. I don't know what day it is. 2 days ago? And then we're rolling into the design phase of things. So architecture will happen, and we'll go through land use approval over the summer, as well as we'll start that we'll go into WIDA for our 4% tax credits along this way. So it'll basically follow exactly a year behind phase one at the triangle, if everything goes correctly. And then this is a longer build because we've got to dig down two stories. The concrete is a little slower, so it's probably a 24-month build once we start.
The triangle's got to come up 10 years.
Right? Oh, yeah, we'll just never.
So this should be done before triangles.
Right. So B1 will open, then this, and then B2, B3 will follow shortly after. Yes, we'll have a lot under construction in 2026.
Any further questions on this? Not a pass for a motion and a second for approval.
So moved.
There a second?
Second.
We move to second city of resolution 4640. The approval will consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objections. And that motion approved. We have one other item, report on the housing authority.
That's me. I did watch some old CDA board videos to see how Larry did these, and so hopefully I do it justice. So the first report is the Housing Choice Voucher Utilization Report. Sadie's team does a great job. As she says, they are always balancing the amount of vouchers that they have versus the money that HUD gives us. So overall, we have about 1,998 vouchers currently in our community. There is a typo. We noticed it after the agenda. The mainstream vouchers should say 95%. They currently say 0%. So we will get that fixed for next month. The one thing, as a new set of eyes, when I looked at this report, one of the questions I had was about the project-based vouchers and that there was a pretty low 65% utilization rate. That is most likely due to the two Heartland properties that were sold earlier this year to Sinair Solutions. Both of those buildings were almost fully all project-based vouchers. And during our unraveling of our relationship with Heartland Housing and finding a new owner with Sinair Solutions, we did have to vacate those buildings. So we worked with the receiver and U.S. Bank to help relocate tenants out of those buildings. Sinair now owns both of those buildings. They are currently going through and doing pretty big rehab to the buildings. And once that rehab is done, we will start leasing up those buildings as well. And so we will see those project-based voucher utilization rates go up once those units start to get filled. I would say they will probably start announcing in the next 2 months that people will be getting leases to start that process. We are not the owner of those buildings. We have the city, neither the city or the CDA ever owned the actual buildings. We did an RFP and selected Heartland Housing, and they were the owners of the building. Yep. So Heartland Housing dissolved completely as an agency and a nonprofit. And so Sinair purchased it. So they now will be the property owners, and then they are working with Lutheran Social Services. Lessons learned.
Yeah. You don't want to go down that same path.
Exactly.
I don't want to do the same thing again.
Yep. So they are working with Lutheran Social Services to be the on-site property management at both of the locations. Yep. It's actually been great. Sinair Solutions. They're the president and everyone is actually right across the street from our office right downtown. So already that relationship of working with them through this whole process has been really great.
And how many units are we talking about?
So and we've changed the names too. So when we now refer to the East Side property that was formerly Rethke, that is now going to be renamed Enzo Apartments. The Tree Lane building is going to be Amphora Apartments. So I'm still working on the new names and utilizing them. But it will remain 60 units at Enzo, and then Tree Lane will rank 45 units. But we are, what another big lesson learned is previously almost all of those units were pulled from our community's coordinated entry, accepting homeless individuals. We have changed that tenant selection that moving forward, only a portion of those units will take people experience literal homelessness at the time of entry.
A better mix.
A more mix. Exactly. But they will continue to have services on site. So Lurian is at Enzo providing services to the singles that live at that building. And they have now formed a relationship with Community Action Coalition, who will provide services for the families out at the Enfora site.
And what percent are they, approximately 30%?
So at the Enfora site for families, 11 of the units will pull families that are currently experiencing homelessness.
Okay. So there'll be some affordability.
There still will be affordability at both of the buildings with both the project-based vouchers and taking low to moderate income individuals.
Okay. What percent of the two buildings are occupied right now, do you know?
Yep, so Enzo is actually empty. There are no tenants at that building. For the Amphora building, we currently have 3 families. Those 3 families are still kind of looking for potential other opportunities, or they may stay.
Is this because they're going to rehab the building?
They're rehabbing the buildings. It was when before Sinair. So the city did not empty them. Since the buildings were under a receivership by the court, it was U.S. Bank was the tax credit investor, and they were the ones that initiated asking tenants to relocate, because as they were preparing to sell the buildings, some of the bids that they were getting from potential buyers required that the buildings be vacant if they were to buy them. Some of the bids were going to discontinue affordability repurpose some of the buildings. So they were preparing to potentially take some of those other offers. But we did go to the court and say that the city and WIDA wanted to be part of those negotiations. And Sinair was one of those partners that actually came and said, you don't have to have the buildings completely vacant if we buy them. And so we were able to work with them to keep some of the tenants.
I will say, just my own study about Housing First, the founder of Housing First, I think his name was Sam Tamberas or something.
Mm-hmm.
And his book describing the principle behind Housing First, Richard Denford, just a refresher of memories, is the notion that you can gain housing without having to first go into drug and alcohol treatment or have your perhaps trauma and any kind of mental health situations all worked out. Hence, it's called Housing First because a lot of people who are coming fresh off the streets do have these issues. But Sam made it clear that it would be unwise to have a project where 100% of the residents were from that situation, and you recommended something like a range of 20 to 40%. So if 11 of the 45 units over what used to be called Tree Lane of those families would be formally unhoused, it seems like we're right in the 20% range.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, really advisable, because having various income groups, people who are perhaps of modest income and can benefit from the affordability, but they're working, they have jobs where they're not pressure on the street, they're able to provide just some natural socialization and perhaps mentorship and kind of laddering and social connection from folks who are otherwise extremely vulnerable. So it's not just up to staff to provide the supportive services. The community itself offers a measure of connection and support that I think, you know, history has proven it makes a difference and works better than the way we first tried this here in Madison.
I think that's a really good point. In the Booth and Social Services, there's a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And I think having a nonprofit be involved in that would be very helpful.
I think part of the issue, there was just so much pressure on the city to try to get homeless folks housed. And
we're overly ambitious as a result.
Yeah. So my understanding is CDA never really owned the street, right?
Nope.
So you had vouchers with individuals who lived in Tree Lane, right?
Project-based.
Project-based.
Stuck them to the units. Yep.
Yeah, to the unit.
And so something I heard you say really kind of struck home with me, because it sounded like the individuals who had, from CDA who had vouchers there, were provided with some additional support services during that time.
So, yep, we had support services at both of the buildings during that time.
And I think that's huge. And I think that's certainly something when things do not work out the way that it should. It's always good to be able to have some kind of plan in place to move people forward. So I commend CDA for kind of sticking with some of those individuals. I knew some of the families over there as well, and they were not as fortunate to be with CDA. And I realized they ended up actually homeless. So I commend CDA for sticking with those individuals and helping them to kind of work through a very difficult situation.
Lastly, were we able to relocate a lot of those folks?
Yep, we actually were pleasantly surprised. Again, shout out to and her team. We ended up converting them to the Housing Choice, the Section 8 program. So they did not lose their vouchers as they were relocated out into the community to other sites. And so that's a lot of recertifying, meeting with those tenants, moving them to another program, and helping them find that new housing.
Good. Thank you. Any other items on your report?
No, but the second report is just the occupancy report. So this is the shout out to Lauren and her team of making sure that our occupancy goal is currently met with HUD. I actually got the opportunity to meet with a lot of her staff this week and hear the great things that they're doing of quick turnarounds of the units and getting people enrolled. They have people for the vacant units almost ready to go with new applications and so forth. So her team is doing a great job of keeping people in their units and also filling units as they come available.
Well, those numbers look really good.
Really, really good. Congratulations. I know this is a lot of work, but kudos to folks for doing that. But like, I know that do we now have the HUD as at a percentage that we at the level that the HUD likes to see?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to look at you and answer
that.
To be a high performer, we have to stay.
Yeah.
We have to stay high.
Are we there?
I think we're over the line.
So they should have been the line a little bit on us a couple months ago to 95%.
Oh, really?
So the nice thing is we don't have it so regularly with them, because we're at 98 or above. We have been for the last 4 or 5 weeks. So we're continuing to work towards getting to that 98.5%.
So they just moved the end zone down.
Oh, yes.
It starts doing so well, and all of a sudden, well, why don't we just give them up 5 yards?
Yeah, yeah.
They are gained. Anyway, thank you.
Yep.
And I think the other piece, too, is that I remember the executive director, not the executive director, but Larry, always saying, you got like 3,000 people on the wait, right? Is that number still accurate?
So they're working on our waiting list and cleaning it up and making sure that folks that are still waiting healthy are able to respond. So we're down a little bit less than the 3,000, but there's quite a few folks on our stuff. Yep.
So there's room for growth.
Yeah.
So although the bar has kind of moved, I think there's still some additional things that CEOs can really bring up. But great work for the team.
Well, thank you very much for your report.
Yep.
Any other items we have on that before we close?
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the delinquency piece anymore.
I don't know if she has that right now.
Is that off the table?
She just.
I think we moved to.
Week two, not.
Yeah.
We moved to not.
I think we're doing it. Less basis.
I think you're going to do it every 2 months, what I thought.
I'll go back and we'll
yeah, that's what I thought we were going to do.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
in January, we should have a report in January on the delivery.
Okay.
Because we talked about doing it every other month to give them more time to put things in, because each month it wasn't always up to date.
Yeah, I just don't like the fact that we didn't. So it's just nice to
January, she should have a full report for the 2024.
But
I have a question.
Have there been any evictions? So we different.
But there might be some behavioral.
Thank you.
Yeah, so no activity or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so bring a report in January.
Okay.
If not, we have this time. I want to wish you all a happy holiday. Thank you for all the work you did this year. At the time, I'll let that with the motion and adjournment. We are not adjourned. Thank you all, and thank you, Dad.
You want to recycle this?
Happy holidays.
Yes.